Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Hello and welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm absolutely delighted today to have a very special guest on the podcast. My podcast guest today is a fantastic investor called Anna Wren, and Anna is the company director of Morgan Curtis Properties. This is a property investment company that specializes in converting rundown HMOs into high-end student housing in South Manchester. She's got a strong focus on finance, and she's grown her property portfolio to over £2.6 million in the past 13 years. Amazing growth. Because of her keen eye for numbers, she's worked for more than a decade in procurement and merchandise planning in both London and Australia. But this knowledge and her experience, of course, is what brings her to being such an expert now to the property market, and particularly in her field of student HMOs in South Manchester. Earlier this year, 2022, she set up Prime Land with Carol Clark, who's a chartered town planner. Using the planning system, they use this knowledge to convert commercial buildings and land into HMOs, flats, and new build housing, which is then sold on to developers with planning, or they build it out themselves. So, Anna, thank you ever so much indeed for being here today. It's really great to welcome you to the podcast. I hope you're doing well.
Great to be here. Thanks, Wendy.
Great. So, Anna, a lot of what we talk about on the HMO Success Podcast is professional HMOs. That's the field that I'm more of an expert in. I did actually start with a student shared house many moons ago, but moved into professional HMOs. So I'm really delighted to have you here today talking about student HMOs, because obviously it's slightly different, the way they're run, the way that they work, the partners that you need to develop in your business. So let's just kind of start by, if you don't mind sharing with the listeners, how you got started in student HMOs and why you decided that that was the type of HMO that you wanted to develop.
Yeah, my sister had actually moved to Manchester and mentioned what a great community of students it was up here. So it was her knowledge that kind of got me started. But originally, that was in 2009, so I was in my late 20s. But I first liked student housing when I was 16 and went and stayed in a friend's student house. So I kind of, it just took me that long from age of 16 up till my late 20s to actually start doing it. So my only regret in property, I think most people say this, is that they didn't start sooner. So yes. So we bought two properties next door to each other. So I did those with my sister, and then I went to Australia, worked for it was about 7 years I was gone, and then came back and refinanced those two. And after 7 years of being away, the growth was so impressive that I managed to carry on buying, and then added another five to my portfolio.
Oh, that sounds amazing. So you obviously had some time away from the country when you were in Australia, came back, had seen the capital values increase and thought, I want to do more of this.
Exactly.
So how did you then start from that point investing more, and then presumably eventually giving up your job?
Well, when I came back, I actually, because it was a nice, easy break, I suppose I'd left Australia, I'd already left my job, so I'd done the hard part. So I came back and then went straight into property full time. So I was just living on the income from the two properties that I had with my sister initially. And then, you know, once I refinanced and bought more, then have increased that to now live quite comfortably. And that's my sole income. So
great
focus. Yeah.
So it was a natural break really for you, wasn't it? You left Australia and then you decided when you came here, okay, let me throw myself fully into it and see if I can build this business.
That's it. Exactly. And for me, the best thing I've ever done is leaving full-time work, because I now look forward to going to work. I mean, I've always enjoyed the jobs that I've done, but now because it's my own business, I actually look forward to sitting down at my desk and working. So that for my quality of life, it's amazing. And I'm always, whenever I talk to any of my friends, fellow mums and that are kind of, you know, sick of the politics at work or anything, I'll always be an advocate for being your own boss. And, you know, when my son is ill and I need to take him to hospital the other week, I didn't need to ask any permission. I had to push back a meeting with my business partner, Carol, but we just pushed our meeting back a little bit and I didn't have to ask permission or take time off or worry about whether or not I'd get the permission or have to make up the time. So that freedom for me is probably the best thing I can say about property investing.
Totally. I couldn't agree with you more there, Anna. Now, in terms of your management, how do you manage your student HMOs?
Well, I've actually got a management company that I work with. So Shared Habitat, Gareth and Mike, they're great. And they manage my entire portfolio. So I did try and do it I started by doing it myself when I first moved back from Australia. Which was great, and it was an eye-opener, and it was good to be a hands-on landlord, and I'm a caring person anyway, so I did make sure it was good, because you need to be a little bit more caring with students. They need a bit more hand-holding. But I then had my first child in 2019, and I had a property manager helping me, but I've soon realised that if she was going to take any time off, I was going to have to pick up the slack, and with a new baby, it probably wasn't going to work. So I went straight to Shared Habitat and they took over my portfolio back in 2019, and they've been doing it since. And they're the best partners I could ever wish for. So yeah, they're great.
Excellent. Excellent. So obviously that frees up your day to day to be doing more of the development. Obviously, you've launched a new business this year as well. So it keeps eye on the strategic, strategic activity rather than the day to day operational activity.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're so good at managing the spend as well, because I think a lot of the time with letting agents, they will send in someone that just that will charge 40. I know someone, it happened to me, someone actually charged £45 to come and wiggle a couple of screws in a light switch. And that's the kind of thing, you know, Shared Habitat much better at knowing about the maintenance side of things. And so they'll be able to tell if it's something like that, where that's not my skill set. I didn't know that. I ended up spending £45 and I was very bitter about it. Whereas they go in with a screwdriver and go and fix it. And things like, you know, at the end of a tenancy, I asked today, I said, oh, are they still leaving lots of stuff? And they said, no, they don't leave much. And anything they do leave, we bag up and take to the tip. And I thought, those are the kind of agents you want. They just bag things up, take it to the tip themselves. They don't pay someone that's going to charge a fortune. So, you know, that really helps to keep the cost down and make it profitable.
Great, great stuff. Now, during COVID, of course, that was quite a challenging time for a lot of people. How did you manage, or how did your agents manage with the students that you had in situ? And of course, all the uncertainty around their studying, whether they were studying from home, they obviously couldn't go into the university. What did you do to sort of set yourselves above the rest when it came to dealing with them during COVID?
Yeah, well, I heard stories of actual other landlords having keys posted back through the door because students were just leaving and going back home because of the lockdown. So it was quite a frightening time on whether or not that was going to happen to us. And luckily Shared Habitat, because they do have a good relationship with all of the tenants, they were able to gauge how the students were feeling. So we, some houses were absolutely fine. We left their rent as it was and they just carried on and we didn't have any issues. And then there was one house in particular, he said, then yeah, I get the feeling that they're not very happy, or, you know, they're getting, I don't know, I suppose impatient and antsy with the situation. So what we did was we just gave them £100 discount per month. And I think they were all actually still staying in the house, to be honest. But it was a discount well spent because they stayed on in the house. So we had a few discounts. We had one girl's dad lost his job, unfortunately. So we put her on a much lower rent so that she could afford to stay in the house and things like that. So we make sure that we accommodate the tenants so that you know, they feel supported and we get to keep a tenant. It's kind of a win-win situation. So
yeah,
we're definitely flexible. Yeah. And I mean, going on with tenants, generally in a student house, per year, obviously it's the intake is July till June. And generally it's normally around January time. We normally have a tenant per house leave or break their contract. So we do kind of allow for that. And then what we normally say is that they have to cover the cost and they find someone else. And we, so far, I've not had an empty room. I think I've had maybe one empty room during COVID. But yeah, we generally manage to refill them. And especially now it's so busy, with the double intake. So, yeah, it's good.
Good. That's really good to hear. It sounds like within your own business, you really amplify those values of care, looking after people, given the fact that your main tenant is a student tenant. What do you think other student landlords can learn from you in terms of how you deal with them? What support do you offer? What advice might you offer to somebody else thinking about doing student HMOs?
I think with students, I think you have to expect that there is a bit more handholding. Be prepared for the mothers because the mums are generally they're more interesting to support than the students. So, of course, looking after their children as a mother, I do understand that, the protective mothers. And also they look to you to make sure that you are going to look out for their child. It's the first time they're leaving home generally. So I think offering that support, making sure that, you know, you run through things with them and tell them where, you know, how things work. We've had calls about isolation switches. Well, we had calls about broken cookers and actually it was just an isolation switch that was flicked and simple things like that. So I suppose having a manual with simple step-by-step how things run, where's the fuse box, where's the, you know, the stopcock for the water, you know, the emergency things. And then Shared Habitat, the management company that I use, they also have a WhatsApp group. So that tends to be our favoured way of communication. So so that messages are received and dealt with as quickly as possible.
Now, in a student HMO, do you also give in weekly cleaners? Do you provide cleaners or maybe fortnightly cleaners, or is it up to the students to keep the house clean?
It's actually up to the students to keep the house clean. So, and I mean, sometimes it's varying degrees of success. Some of them are very house proud. Actually, I went into one with an electrician, and it was the boys' turn to cook. It was a house of three girls and three boys, and it was the boys' turn, and they were cooking a spaghetti bolognese ragu with, I don't know, it was a very fancy sounding bolognese anyway, in a slow cooker. So I was like, wow, they're a cut above what everyone expects students to be. So yeah, just because they're called students, I think, you know, they can be surprising.
Yes, I totally agree. And I think every group of students also creates its own kind of culture within the house too. You know, obviously most of them will know each other before they've moved into a house together. And you hope that the friendships are going to survive the year of living together or the 2 years of living together. But I think each home almost does create its own home and those kind of relationships develop over those time that they live together, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, and they do look out for each other. And as we said, if there have been any issues, then I think that the main thing is being accommodating. I know that we had one girl that wanted to leave, and I have a feeling that it was because some of the other girls weren't being very kind to her. And so instead of holding a hard line and saying, well, no, you need to pay your rent, then we reduced her rent as much as possible. And she was actually much happier with that. I think that she actually did leave the house. So it does happen sometimes when people fall out, and she was obviously really unhappy. So it was important that we made sure that financially we supported her decision to be able to get away from that negativity. So, but luckily it doesn't happen very often. Normally they stay friends. So
we'll
on that.
In terms of the return, so I speak to a lot of HMO investors every week, and depending on where they're investing, some areas get good capital growth, they get strong capital growth, but maybe the returns are not quite so good in terms of cash flow. Others are getting really high cash flow, but they're not getting such good capital growth. How would you see your investing area in terms of those two angles, Anna?
I'd say they're both good, actually. I have seen, so because I had fixed term mortgages expire just last year, and then one due again this year, I've been able to track the capital growth quite accurately with valuations happening. And most of my houses are all six beds, so they're like for like. So I've noticed that they have literally gone up 10% per annum. So it's been 20% growth in the last 2 years, which is great. And then also the returns that have been strong. So, well, it depends on the house, I suppose, but I normally look at about £1,300 a month income after all costs and mortgage and management fees, etc., before tax. So, yeah. Which I think is pretty strong for an HMO market.
And is that a six bed you're talking about?
That's
there?
A six bed, yeah.
Six bed, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good solid return, isn't it? To get that. And because those students are in for, say, is it an 11-month period that they normally stay for?
Yeah, so it's half rent over July and August. But then sometimes they'll stay, if they actually move in, then we stipulate that full rent's due. So yeah. If they're just keeping their stuff there, then it's half rent, obviously. So.
And how is the demand at the moment? You mentioned about the double intake. For those listeners who aren't in the student HMO market, tell us about that double intake and how it's affected your business.
Well, we just have not had any trouble getting renting all of our rooms out. So because of COVID, there was, I think they froze the intake for 1 year. So the following year, there were twice as many students coming in. So everyone was worried, you know, the talk around during the pandemic that was that there wasn't going to be any, the demand was going to drop down because people were going to start homeschooling and it was, you know, the end of the world and people were forecasting all sorts of things. And then the next year there was the double intake and, you know, all of the houses have been in high demand. So we haven't had a problem. And from what Shared Habitat have mentioned, they said that there are even students from Manchester going to Manchester University having to look as far as Liverpool to find accommodation. So there's huge demand. And we actually advertise. So we advertise around now. We've just done rent reviews to accommodate for the energy price rises, unfortunately. So but we've stuck to a 5% increase so that it's not too expensive. And we do all bills included. But so we look at renting them from now, we advertise, we look at kind of getting that sealed by Jan-Feb. I mean, the absolute latest is Easter, and then they're ready for moving in July. So it happens quite quickly. It's like the new students move in and all of a sudden you advertise for the next set. So it happens quickly.
And in terms of the summer work that gets done on the property, once the tenants have moved out, assuming they've left it in a sort of reasonable state, do you tend to do upgrades then? Is that when you do some redecoration, maintenance and so on? Or do you find that a lot of your properties are already future-proof since you first developed them?
No, there's definitely maintenance that needs to happen over the summer. So furniture gets replaced or a lick of paint. And I did actually upgrade a house from a four-bed to a six-bedroom house during the summer once, so that was a tight timeline, but we managed it. So I think we got them, you know, because they move in towards the end of September, some of them, so we just assured them that it was going to be ready. It was a little bit nail biting towards the end, I'll be honest, but and it was my first big renovation. Without my sister helped me with my first two, and then the rest of them I've done on my own. So it was the first one I've done on my own, so it was kind of like, is it nearly ready?
Yes.
And the builder's like, yeah, it's nearly ready. I'm like, nearly ready.
Only 1,000 jobs to do.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So a few late nights to get it finished, but we did it over a summer. So, you know, there's a lot you can actually, if you set a deadline, it's amazing what you can do.
Yeah, that's true. And having a good to-do list, that's always the
that's
key.
It. Yeah, exactly. And keeping on at the builders, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Just nagging them. It's a tried and tested technique used by most women or many men.
Yes.
It seems to work. Yeah, great. Okay, well, that's really good, because I know when I had my student HMO, I would find that during the year, the students would sort of look after it-ish. But then when they moved out, that would be when I'd see what they'd really left behind, and there would be 6 weeks at least of good clearing and painting and, you know, mending and so on. So now I was interested to hear what you said, Anna, that you offer bills included, which is unusual actually for many student landlords, who will pass the arrangement of the bills onto the students. What made you decide to do it as bills included?
Because I'm a control freak, maybe. So I like to, I think that there's a couple of reasons, really. I think it helps with the house dynamics that they don't have to arrange and split them. I guess there is a little bit of a trust issue. It's whether or not people are actually going to set up the bills. I have heard stories of people getting CCJs because people haven't dealt with the bills efficiently. So I don't know how often that still happens. That's, you know, 13 years ago I'd heard that story, but I kind of was frightened by the thought of people not paying bills. And I thought, well, at least if I do it, I know it's going to be done. So, and to be honest, back in, you know, before the bill energy prices went crazy, then it was a better way to get a higher rent. So it actually made sense financially. I don't think that the bills are so expensive that it makes sense to take it away. So at the moment, we're still managing to cover those costs. So, and we've got Inspire thermostats in all of the houses now.
Yes, which clearly helps. Having all those management tools, if you like, is what makes it not so scary. And I think for a lot of landlords where they are literally still on old-fashioned thermostatic heaters or heating systems where they have got no control over that heating, that's where I would be recommending that they really start to move with the times and make sure that they've got, you know, app-based control systems and are looking at, to some of the other technological answers to energy, because I think there are lots of ways in which we can save money on heating, and it doesn't need to be on all day every day, and it doesn't mean to say that the house will be cold. It can still be very pleasant for the tenants, but it can be cheaper to run, and if anything, my feeling is that, you know, this whole sort of energy crisis that we're in, it might make people realize that actually putting on a jumper, putting on some thicker socks, it's all doable. We haven't had our heating on at home at all. We haven't switched it on yet, and we're in the middle of October, and yes, I'm having to wear thicker socks and fleece, but it's great. Honestly, I'm kind of sticking it to the man here, Anna, and
it's great. I was going to say, living in Australia, it's interesting. That's exactly what they do. Australia has terrible insulation in their houses because they have, and they don't accept that they have cold winters because they have hot summers, and they're generally longer and milder. The milder winter, they think, means that their house isn't going to get cold, but they get really, really, really cold. It used to cost me $200 a month in heating because I'd use ducted heating, so it was more expensive. The windows were, you know, single glazed, so all of that. And so coming back to the UK, you know, where you've done a full refurb on a house, you've got an EPC that's a C grade, and then double glazing and everything, actually the houses do stay really warm, and it doesn't cost a fortune to heat them if you're careful. And since putting in all of our Inspire thermostats, not one student has complained about them. So it just goes to show that they are still warm enough. So it's that lack of understanding about, you know, and I guess I'm not really helping because I'm paying their bills for them. But, you know, they don't learn about how much it costs to pay the bills, and therefore leaving the heating on, they wouldn't even think twice about it. So the Inspire thermostats really helped with that. So,
yeah, that's a really great tip. Excellent. Thank you. Now, Anna, you have set up a new business this year with your partner, Carol Clark, your business partner, Carol Clark. Tell us a little bit more about that, because that's a bit different from what you're doing in terms of HMOs. I'd love to learn more about this, this prime land, as you've called it.
Yes. So prime land, Carol and I set it up in February. We decided that with her as a chartered town planner, her skills are getting planning permission. And my entire investment career in property, I've avoided getting planning permission because all I've done is everything under permitted development rights. So I very swiftly, you know, tried to avoid it. So she's got this skill, and then I have this skill of analysing deals and the financials and the numbers. And my passion is finding the finance and getting remortgaging things. And I love all of the numbers side of it. So, and that's the bit that she's not so keen on. So the two of us have complementary skills, and we set up this business. So we seek to secure commercial properties, so land or commercial sites with land, with a view to converting them to residential, and then either to flats, HMOs, or new build houses. So
and how is the business going?
It's going really well. We've secured two sites, and we've actually started sending off-market letters as well. And we just had the first viewing booked in for this week, in fact, for that one, which has the potential to be an HMO. So still sticking in HMO land as well. So our business plan is to develop, so to sell to some developers with planning gain, some of them to build ourselves, and then also some to turn into HMOs, and most likely keep the HMOs as a way of building our residual income every month. So so we've got a few different avenues that we can look at, and ways that we can make a site work, I suppose, that people might not be able to make a site work, and we can.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I think the you know, one of the things you learn as you go on with property is that adding value is a skill. It's an art, and it's a skill, and you need to be able to bring both together, because when you add value to a property, well, obviously you're creating more capital, and sometimes it's just through creative thinking or through pondering or through knowledge that allows you to do that. So whether it's planning gain, whether it's development, whether it's things like loft conversions or extensions, you know, I often say to my clients, you bought the freehold, generally you bought the freehold to that house, the land that it sits on. What can you now do with it? Because if you're just going to give it a light refurb, that's fine, but actually there might be more opportunities here that you might be missing. And I think the more that you can learn about how to add value to land, to buildings, that's actually an incredibly powerful way to make money almost out of thin air, because it's what comes from your thinking that adds the value, and you can capitalize upon that.
Absolutely, yes. And this is where Carol and I work well together, because she can look at a piece of land that I think, my goodness, that's tiny, we won't put anything on it. And she'd be like, yeah, there's six, seven houses on that. So all of a sudden I know quite quickly the values of properties, and then what would sell for more. So I can say, right, no, flats would work better, or houses. So it's that balancing act between what works for an area and then its value as well. So
yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Sounds like you're a match made in heaven. Very good pairing there.
Yeah, it's great. We're really having fun doing everything, so it's good.
The other thing, of course, that's maybe the most important thing in your life is also that you're a mum and you've got children. How do you juggle all of this? How do you manage it all?
Well, I have a 3-year-old Oliver and an 18-month-old Alexander. And so I'm very lucky, because I have my property portfolio. I can afford to employ a nanny who also helps me out in the office as well. She's a dream come true. So Danielle is, everyone says that they need a Danielle because she just literally helps with anything that I'm too stretched to do. If I want to take the children out, I can, and then she can help do some of the admin in the business. So I have the best of both worlds. So that's how I manage, and nursery as well.
So you've utilized outsourcing. Effectively, you've outsourced, you've insourced a member of staff, very important. Created a role for them. I think this is, again, this is something for women to learn, that if we're going to have it all, which is, you know, a kind of dream for many people, to have the freedom, to have the income, also to have the quality of family life, and to be able to grow a business, you've got to use other people, haven't you? You've got to be able to bring other people in and give them a role, train them up, and that takes a bit of time and a bit of effort, but it maximizes your time. It's all about leverage. Do you have other people that you have in your team that help you?
At the moment, I don't. I'm looking at getting someone that is more dedicated entirely to admin in the business, because obviously, as Carol and I are working more on projects, then the administrative workload will increase. So not at the moment, but then I do have someone helping with processes. So she runs a consultancy firm to help small businesses to improve their processes. And she's actually just come in to help make sure that I've streamlined everything as much as possible and have all the processes in place, so that we don't even need to think about, we've got certain processes in place already, you know, checking rents that have come in and running our accounts on zero. But it's just about making sure that we don't even have to think about those, and they happen automatically every month. So it's just having that extra helping hand. So I feel like she's already a little member of my team, albeit I can, you know, I don't need to put her on the payroll, which is even better, arguably. So that's really good.
And I think it's about having that group of people around you, so you can kind of create your business ecosystem that allows you to feel in control, to be strategic about what you're doing, to measure, to manage. You know, you're still going to have directors meetings, you still need to analyze the accounts and so on, but being able to keep your eye on the ball. Too many people that I see fail to outsource and fail to systemize, and what that means is that they don't have any time and they're busy doing the day-to-day, when they're the pivotal person in that business that needs to be there thinking about the next steps, thinking about the opportunities, thinking about the strategy, not thinking about the day-to-day management of the business. So, you know, Annie, from your corporate and industry experience already, you've brought that to bear in your current businesses, and, you know, it's working for you, which is really positive.
Yeah, and for me, the best thing I can do with my time is spend my time with my children. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is working on the exciting projects that I want to bring in. So I don't want to be spending my time doing the day-to-day stuff. And so I think for me, the biggest challenge for outsourcing was actually getting all of the naysayers out of my head. You know, the people that say, well, who do you think you are? Why should you have a PA or a cook? Or, well, you should be earning X amount before you do that. Or, you know, the list goes on of what people's opinions of, oh, well, you don't have the right to do that. Well, really? Are you in that position? And I had all of this going around in my head. And the moment I gave myself the permission to take on a full-time member of staff, my life has just been so much better. And it's because I've stopped letting other people write the script for me. I've decided to take control and decide where I wanted to put my time. And my time is best spent working, but also then with my children. And I can balance that so much better now.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I think you're absolutely right that that's a key thing that everybody has to deal with, is that voice in their head that maybe comes from our childhood or comes from growing up or comes from role models that we've seen, where we perhaps feel, oh, I'm not sure if I should do this. But actually, you're absolutely right. You sometimes just have to take control and make a decision and say, well, I'm going to do this. Certain people might not like it or approve, but actually some of that is fear. It's very often a fear of somebody else's opinion of us. And actually, they're not thinking that at all. They're probably thinking, I wish I could employ staff like Anna does.
Yeah, exactly. And, and that's been most people's reaction. They said, everyone needs a Danielle. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Well, you're obviously doing something that works. You know, you're obviously very, very happy. You're in the right place, which is great. And I'm so excited for you. I think the next few years are going to be very exciting for you. Your new business sounds wonderful as well. So we'll carry on looking out for you, Anna, with your growth of your business and also the growth of your family. Whether you have any more children, I'm not referring to that. I'm just simply saying as your boys grow up and yeah, they'll follow in the footsteps of a successful mum, and that's a great role model that they've got in front of them too.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's been great to have you on today, Anna. Thank you very, very much for being my guest today. Fascinating for me to kind of get in touch again with student HMOs because I'm not doing that day to day anymore, but it's lovely to hear from you. And it does take me back to my days when I had a student HMO. And clearly the student HMO market is thriving in your neck of the woods, but I think that's true across the UK. If anyone would like to get in touch with Anna, I'll make sure that we can do that in the podcast notes. If anyone would like to find out more about her new company, if you're looking for opportunities, I'm sure that she'd be delighted to have a conversation with you with her company Prime Land. And I'd like to say very, very big thank you to Anna Wren for being my podcast guest this week. And good luck with your new developments and the next year in property, Anna.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Wendy.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.